Hello and welcome to Social Creatures. I'm Kat Anderson, and this is the show that explores some of the most captivating success stories on social media. For today's show, I'm talking to none other than Garen Noon.
So I had no concept that there was a pathway from putting up stupid TikToks to like being involved in the Late Late Show or people coming up to you on the streets and knowing who you are. I didn't ever conceive. I thought, even if I'd imagined I would have had as many followers as I have now on TikTok and Instagram and all that, I think I would have assumed they would all be like these spread out kind of weird people with my sense of humor and I'd never really run into them. But that hasn't been the case at all. You know, a lot of the time when I'm out and about, it's quite regular if I go to a busy place that I'm going to have maybe 50, 60 people come up to me in quite a small space of time and try and take a picture. I had no concept of that.
Social media is a space for anyone, and really, nearly anything goes. But what is it that propels an account to the summit of success or popularity? Three seasons in, and I can honestly say that every story is unique, unpredictable, and fascinating. And digging into the why behind these stories is exactly what we're here for. Throughout the series, we'll be talking to the brains behind some of the best accounts that you know, and hopefully some that you don't know yet. And new to this season, I'm going to be chatting with influencers who've achieved staggering success on social media, who are at the top of their game and setting the trends. How the heck did they do it? Together, we'll uncover the way brands, organizations, and individuals have carved out their niche in the vast landscape of social media, and how you can do it too. In just one whirlwind year, Garen Noon skyrocketed to social fame with his infectious charm and hilariously entertaining food reviews that captivated audiences across various social media platforms. While his rise was meteoric, it's also safe to say it was quite unintentional. In early 2023, Garen decided to take his friend's advice to post some of the funny videos of food reviews he was making to TikTok. Just over 1 year later, and he now has over a million followers between Instagram and TikTok, has had numerous brand deals, cover stories, TV appearances, and even arena gigs. He's achieved high levels of creator success, and seemingly all kind of by accident. However, Garen is no stranger to hard work, and there's a lesser known story of tenacity and talent behind this charismatic and charmingly funny man's success. Garen's charisma and ability to make almost anything funny is at the heart of his success. And so even though a lot of his content seemingly speaks to life in Ireland, his reach is global. From his first witty critique to becoming a bona fide social media sensation, Garen's journey is a testament to the transformative power of digital storytelling. Fairly early on, Garen coined a catchphrase, "Follow me, I'm delicious." And I cannot wait for what I'm sure will be a delicious conversation today. So Garen, it's so good to have you here joining us today.
Hello, how are you getting on? Thanks for having me.
I'm not too bad. No, delighted to have you join us on Social Creatures. But for some of our listeners who maybe haven't yet come across you on TikTok or Instagram and don't know who you are, and perhaps you could tell us a little bit about your rise to success over the past year, because really you sort of have gone from naught to 100, if 100 was 500,000 followers.
Yeah, it's weird enough. So I am known for, I suppose, reviewing food and small towns in Ireland and occasionally whinging about the weather. That's essentially what I do. For some reason, people watch that. The video started off just with me eating things I found in the shop and going, ah, that was nice. No real insight into it or anything like that. Just going, ah, that was nice or it wasn't nice. People started watching them. I did rankings of snacks with best to worst, and that caused a lot of controversy. So that was kind of initially what got me started.
And wasn't it that you were doing these privately and then a friend of yours was like, you should throw them up on TikTok. Is that right?
Yeah. So I had an Instagram page for music because I've been a musician my whole life. And I had a few thousand followers on it, maybe like 7,000 or 8,000 followers on my Instagram. And I just used to put up little guitar pieces I came up with and stuff. And occasionally I started doing cereal reviews when I saw a weird cereal, because I'm a bit of a cereal connoisseur. I love carbohydrates. So yeah. So I started reviewing cereals and there wasn't many people watching them, maybe a few hundred. But my followers on Instagram started sending me cereals to review and everything, and they were really into it. And people were like, oh, you need to start posting these on TikTok. These would go wild on TikTok. And I had never used TikTok. I thought it stole all your data off your phone and all that kind of crap, which I believe it doesn't, and not any more so than anyone else. So that was how I started. So I threw up a couple of the videos. Initially, it was I used to do 15-minute cereal reviews where I would eat the entire bowl of cereal and just go, that's nice, yeah, no, spoon four, oh, it's starting, the moisture is starting to get in there. Completely pointless. I don't know why anybody watched them. So my first TikToks were those 15-minute videos cut up into one-minute segments, which obviously nobody watched.
But it did get successful pretty quickly. What were the videos that sort of were the turning point for you? And when did you start to see your followers start to grow dramatically?
So for me, dramatically was getting any at all, because there was like kind of nothing when I just reposted those videos. But then I was like, oh, I'll do a video like specifically for TikTok. So I decided to review all the ice creams from the freezer section in the shop. And I did do you know what a tier list is?
Yes. Yes, it's just, but explain it. And maybe if our listeners don't know what it is, explain the tier list concept.
So a tier list is a ranking system from like A to F. And then you put your favorite ice creams in A and your least favorite in F. And it's very controversial because your favorite ice cream obviously might be somebody else might detest it. So I put that video up and that got like 100,000 views and people started following me straight away. And I realized after making that video, I was like, oh, do you know what? If you just make a video like with a really strongly held opinion and you refuse to hear anybody else, they'll get really angry about it and everybody will just start chatting in the comments and stuff like that. So I continued doing those videos about the most controversial things I could think of, like what's the best sandwich, what's the best dessert, whatever it might be, the best item in a fry up. And because people were talking, the videos consistently sort of got views at the start.
Yeah, so it's views and a lot of engagement. It's funny that you say, but the most controversial topics you can think of, because I think another thing that you're saying here is strongly held opinions, but over things that people could actually get really annoyed about, but you're not going to hurt anybody's feelings, which is almost a little bit of a rarity on the internet, you know, where a comment section goes on fire. But really? Is that it? I mean...
Yeah, so this is fairly deliberate, what you're saying is I'm being divisive in the most inclusive way possible. Mm-hmm. So a lot of comment sections are divisive in a way that people will completely fall out over. I was like, well, you can kind of harness that energy for stuff that really doesn't matter. Because everybody's really passionate about their favorite chocolate bar, but they're not going to walk away from the video feeling awful. So that's what I tried to do. I tried to just have, you know, really passionate discussion about stuff that doesn't matter, like the shape of a tea bag or whatever it might be.
I do think some people might be quite shocked to hear you say that the shape of a tea bag doesn't matter, but we'll skirt past that.
So okay, so let's just say that it doesn't matter to 99% of people. To me, it is still the most important issue affecting our nation today and all other crimes against tea.
Okay, sorry, I can't even believe I brought that up. But yeah, so let's say you've started to share these videos. You've had kind of a remarkable switch into, oh my God, you're getting followers. This is, you're sort of achieving what a lot of people put a lot of, you know, time and effort into doing to continue that growth then, because the growth did continue and it has continued throughout the course of the year. Would you say that consistency was key? How did you start to sort of figure out how to maintain that growth?
So I'm sort of looking at it now and picking up on things that weren't necessarily intentional at the time. So when I started, it really was a bit of crack. I actually had no concept that you could do it as a job. So I was really just doing it for the crack. And I think that is a big thing, because I think if I was trying to chase something deliberately, I probably would have quit, because I would have been like, oh, I don't know. I would have got wrapped up in numbers too quickly and what I should be posting and how this video did. And I really wasn't at the start. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, basically just being consistent. Once I put out a couple of videos and I realized people like some of them, I was like, well, if they don't like 90% of the videos, but I post one every day, then roughly every week I'll have a video people like. Mm-hmm. That was it. And that was kind of how it worked. Like most of them at the start, nobody watched. And then once a week I'd have one that'd get, you know, a couple hundred thousand views, 50,000 views maybe. And then I kind of got better and better at realizing what people actually wanted to see. And just picking up little things as I went along that improved engagement and stuff like that. But I wasn't thinking, I mean, these are terms I know now because I've been doing a while. I wasn't thinking of it in terms of engagement. I was like, how will I annoy people about sausages this week or whatever it might be? But that's what it winds up being, is engagement.
Okay. One other thing that I think is quite interesting is that you do have a global audience now. But a lot of your content, and certainly at the beginning as well, was very focused on Irish life and life in Ireland and things that sort of feel a little bit synonymous with this part of the world.
Yep.
But only there recently you were featured in a Canadian news story and you do have this global reach. Like, what's your take on that?
I think what makes a global audience gravitate to me and other people who are like very Irish centered is I'll get a comment from a Filipino person on a video about how Irish parents act and they'll go, oh my God, this is exactly what Filipino parents are like. Mm-hmm. So there's all these parallels where people are like, oh, Ireland has actually got in this way a very similar culture to me. And they'll share it to their family going, look, the Irish are just like us. It's that kind of a thing. And then I did a video about Canadian prices because one of the videos that got me started, one of the first videos I ever had, I think it might have been the first video I ever had that got over 1 million views, was me going into Tesco and taking pictures of everything I thought was too expensive. So ever since then, occasionally I do one of those videos. And I was like, oh, do you know what? I'm going to start doing these for other countries now. So I did one for Canada. And Canada's prices are insane. Mm. Cheese is like $30. And I was like, what is this? And because it's such a hot topic in Canada at the moment, and they were like, look, even this fella can see it. So it got shared around a lot in Canada. Yeah. Yeah, that video got a few million views and most of them were Canadian. It didn't even really hit an Irish audience. That's the amazing thing about these platforms is if you make a video about something, it can get out to an audience that you've never even had before, which is crazy to me still.
Well, I know I have a friend in New Zealand and he knows who you are. When you think of far flung places from Ireland, I think New Zealand is probably about as far away as you can get.
Yeah.
So it is amazing that you've got this.
Amazes me.
Are you able to track your audience?
Yeah, I can see all the metrics. Yeah.
And are you seeing it is a nice global spread?
60% of it is Ireland and the UK. And they're basically evenly split. So it's like 33% Irish, 33% UK. And then the rest is Australia, Asian countries, European countries. Australia and the US would be the two biggest outside of the other two. They would make up like another, say, 15-20%.
Wow.
And then the rest is all over the world, which is mad. And I have people come up to me sometimes when I'm in Dublin from maybe, again, the Philippines or something like that. They don't even really have much English. And they'll say, when I was talking about coming to Ireland, I found your videos and I was watching them to learn more about how Irish people were. That's mad to me. I just find it wild.
Wow.
You know, people are like, oh, I'm going to visit Ireland. And they come across me and I'm one of their sort of touchstones for what Ireland's going to be like. I just think it's mad.
Yeah. You're like Mr. Ireland now.
I mean, they'll have loads of people, but it's just amazing to me that, and it made me realize how important it is to reflect the country in a good way is that, you know, when you're putting stuff up online, you're some people's touchstone for your country. So yeah, it's strange. You know, it's mad.
On a slightly more serious note on that exact point, I know that all of your content tends to be comedy. It is comedy. Mm-hmm. But whenever there's been things that have happened in the Irish news where you're called to comment on, and that's an interesting thing because you are sort of considered a voice of Ireland. How do you feel about that sort of trajectory with things where, you know, if something happens, I mean, there were riots in Dublin that you actually did comment on. And I suppose, you know, it's not outside the realms of possibility that other things might happen in the future. Is that something you'd prefer to stay away from and just continue to focus on your content? Or is it something you sort of see yourself inevitably being drawn more and more into?
Do you know, I'll tell you, so I get a lot of pressure to talk about a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of people being annoyed at me that I don't talk about things. And they think the reason that I don't do it is because I don't want to split my audience. And in a way, that is actually why I don't do it. There are people interacting on my comment sections with each other who would hate each other on any other video. They could be on five other videos screaming at each other about something and they're liking each other's comments on my videos. And I really value that. I have an opinion about things like everybody else does, but I don't think my opinion is that important. I don't think me offering my opinion to most things outweighs the good it does to have a space where people aren't arguing about things like they are everywhere else. There is occasions where I will talk about something. So I've talked about like drugs and anxiety and stuff like that before because it's an issue I do think I can actually offer some insight on because I have a family background in a lot of that stuff and I had agoraphobia for years. And when I've spoken about that, I've seen the difference it's made and there aren't many people speaking about it.
Yeah.
And then I spoke about the riots in Dublin because, again, a lot of people's opinion of Ireland is coming from me and maybe 5-6 other people that they watch online. And I had people coming to me asking, you know, is Ireland a racist country? Is it safe for me to go? And so that's what made me feel like, okay, this is something I do need to say something about. And I got a lot of backlash on that because I took a very, I wouldn't say I took necessarily an overtly pro-immigrant stance, but it was obvious that I wasn't on the other side of the argument.
Yeah.
I said what I thought needed to be said, and I got a lot of backlash, and I don't really care. It's not about that. To me, it's mostly about keeping people together. So no is the answer. I don't intend on talking about too much political stuff.
I have to say, I really love that answer. I think it's really nice, because I do think sometimes whilst there's so much value in creating digital spaces for people to communicate, oftentimes it does get really divisive. And yeah. So you get these echo chambers. So I love that you've got this place where that's sort of set aside and people can just have this space to coexist peacefully. And it's nice to hear as well, you know, and I think there's a lot to be said for you have had this very quick ascent into being a recognizable figure. That definitely, you know, that wouldn't be crazy if that went to your head a little bit.
I eat crisps on the internet. It'd be hard for that to go to my head.
But you know what I mean? Like, you are a recognizable figure now. And actually, we're going to get onto this. So like, obviously, we've established sort of the early ascent. You're building the followers. You're getting this audience. Brands are now queuing up to work with you. And, I am a follower of yours, and I've seen you've done lots of different brand partnerships now. So I'm interested, like, how did that start to emerge? And again, for someone who, if you will forgive me, it sort of feels like you kind of fell into this and it all sort of went quite well. The brands coming and knocking on your door must have been quite an interesting experience. Can you tell us a little bit about that, and how did they start to work with you, and how did that whole side of it start to blossom?
So for the first, I'd say 7 months I was doing the videos, I had no idea that that was really even a thing. Like, I understood that there were influencers, but I didn't actually understand how they made money. Like, I had no concept of it.
Yeah.
So then I was approached by a few agencies. And like, a few people had gone on to me, go, I'll give you €300 to come down and eat my burger in my shop or whatever. I mean, and I mostly said no to it. I think I'd done one ad with Cara Boyle and they asked me to do a song about chicken rolls. And I was like, well, that's right up my street. So I'll do that. And so, yeah, it really wasn't until I was approached by these agencies. They're like, oh, you know, we have brands and they'll get you to do a funny video for them and they'll give you a fee for it. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. I'll do that. So I didn't really know. And so basically the way it works now is I have an agency. They have certain brands that they work with regularly, and those brands can request me. And luckily for me, quite a lot of them are interested in working with me because they like the style of the videos I do. Mm-hmm. I think as far as brand stuff goes, it's really all about, I mean, what makes a brand interested in working is whether or not you have engagement and whether or not you're, you know, relatively safe person to work with. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Or say something wild. So
yeah, if you're a loose cannon or something, they're going to be a bit more nervous. Yeah.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
But how has that affected your content? Do you get much say in how you promote these brands, and do you get like full creative control? And is it something that you were nervous to do, introducing that? Like, how did your audience respond to it as well? Because I think you're kind of seen as this very relatable, down to earth guy. And so I wonder, was there any sort of, again, I don't want to keep bringing up backlash, but was there backlash from your audience to you doing brand partnerships?
Not really, no.
That's good.
Some people are mad that I do ads, but like, that is what it is. And look, fair enough if they think that, if that's somebody's opinion, I'm not going to argue with them. So I was nervous at first. Like, I didn't know how it all worked. So when they approached me, I was like, well, I'm only going to do obviously stuff I like, but I'm very lucky. Some people have to do like scripts. Mm. Most of the time, a brand will come and go, we have new crisps. And we'd love Garen to make a video about it. Send us one and we'll see what we think. Basically, it. The only guidelines usually are they don't want me to curse in the video, which is fair enough.
Okay.
I can understand why they don't want that. That's the only thing from my point that usually makes the video any different in terms of how I would think about making it, is I'm not a curse. Mm. Like, a lot of them don't even really want me to promote the brand. Like, I did a video there for Apache Pizza not so long ago. I think I maybe said Apache Pizza once. Most of it was about a date I was on for Valentine's Day. I think you see the Apache Pizza logo once. It's just a, you know, they have the, I think it's called brand awareness is the style of ad it's called, where it's not like, buy a pizza now for $7.99. It's more of a just, I'm at Apache, having a crack.
Yeah, it's like brand affiliation.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's really nice. Like, that's a nice position to be in, because it's not going to be too abrasive, you know, where you're sort of having to sell your soul and say, buy whatever pizza. You can just do it in a way that actually...
Yeah, well, there are certain things that I will outright refuse to do certain things. So I won't tell anybody to buy anything. I won't tell them it's my favorite product or the best product or anything like that. And I'll never say the price of it is only X, because I mean, only is relative. Mm. So there's things I absolutely will not say. But other than that, I mean, if I like it, I'll work with a brand if I like the product. Sometimes there's been some issues with recent political things where maybe I might not necessarily work with a brand because they support something I don't support. And that's really it though. Most of the brands are very nice, very easy to work with. Not trying to screw anyone over. Yeah, so that's been my experience anyway.
Oh, I love that. So Garen, in this season of the podcast, we publish a poll on Sprout Social's accounts on LinkedIn and Instagram ahead of every episode to bring a little extra something from our listeners into the conversation. And so for this episode, we asked, true or false, content creators need to have great video production skills. So I'm curious, what do you think was the response to this?
I'm tempted to say people might, I think people are going to say no, because that's the truth. And I think people realize that.
Interesting. Okay, so it actually, the result was that 57% said false. Yeah, so it's, you know, quite split down the middle, but
yeah,
you don't think you need to have good video editing skills. So obviously your style is casual. It's casual. It's,
yes.
You know, and I think that's part of the whole brand and the vibe is that it feels very like of the moment and it feels very authentic. But in terms of the video editing skills, you obviously do more of that maybe than you did at the start. What are your thoughts on that? Is that something that you've got better at or you think genuinely isn't that important?
So as far as like, does video production matter? I think it just depends on what you're doing. So I think there are certain videos where me having a high production value would be great. And I think sometimes that contrast could be funny. But in terms of like, if you're just getting your personality out there, getting your opinion out there, I don't think it matters. It doesn't seem to matter. Most of the people who are doing really well on social media, just on social media, a lot of them aren't doing mad stuff with video production because it just takes too long and it's become sort of a daily content thing. But yeah, I don't do much with it. I'm a firm believer in outsourcing things, focus on staying in your lane. So if I were to do a big production with stuff and a lot of editing, I would outsource that. I don't think it's useful for me to spend a lot of time learning that.
Okay, so you think you absolutely can become a successful content creator and not be great at video skills? I think that's absolutely fair.
I'll go even further and say, if you're starting out trying to get into content production, I think quantity matters more than quality. I absolutely 100% believe that.
Okay.
Because you don't know what people want at the start. And it's better to try a lot of things, kind of half realized, and figure out what people are biting on before leaning in and trying to do this big thing. I think going all in on quality at the start is why most people fail. Like spending 2 weeks on a video that five people watch, that's just going to make you never want to do it again. But if you make 40 videos that take you 40 seconds and one of them does well and you go, oh, maybe I could do something with that. So whenever anybody asks me like for advice and they're starting off, I'm like, just post every day. And then once people start biting at things, then maybe think more about how you can flesh things out a bit.
It really reminds me of stand-up. And so I know that this is another sort of career path that's come to you as a result of all of this, is that you've been dabbling in the world of stand-up. And I feel like that experimentation is a great way to test materials. Have you found that's been helpful for you doing stand-up?
Yeah. So, I mean, I wouldn't call myself a stand-up comedian by any metric. So I do shows and they're like sort of half music, half, I don't really call it stand-up because I think there's a different process that you go through. But my videos have been a bit of a practice ground for what it is I do. So I kind of know what topics I can bring up and how I might present them. But live is a completely different world to make a TikTok because you can pause between each sentence and seem really funny and charismatic. When in reality, you got up on stage like, so hello, tea bags are gone awry, are they not? Like it's a completely different thing. But yeah, it's got me into that world for sure.
And we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but just to go into it again, it is safe to say that a lot of your content is fairly liberally peppered with one or two curse words.
That's for sure.
You've mentioned that the brands don't want you to curse, but is this something that as you get bigger, you think is going to change? Or do you think like with maybe a desire to do more brand partnerships, you might change that? Or do you want to stay true and keep speaking as you speak?
As far as brand partnerships has come up, it has never been an issue. So I've never I mean, maybe my agency comes up against it. I don't know. But I mean, I've worked with, you know, the likes of Google and stuff, and they don't go, we don't want to work with him because he curses in some of his videos.
Okay.
People are going out there saying, you know, stuff that's actually harmful. I'm just flippantly saying a few curse words. And I think the media world has kind of started to move beyond that now and realize that's a stupid thing to worry about when people are saying stuff that's actually actively harmful.
I'm wondering as well, as a content creator, do you ever find that there's a challenge between making the content that you want to make versus the content that you know is going to get engagement? I mean, have you ever had something where you're like, oh, geez, that has really done well. I would probably prefer not to continue doing that. But where are you going to fall in that debate?
Yeah, there's a fine line. People who say, I don't look at numbers, I don't care what does well, everybody's looking at that. When I see a video idea or a video idea comes into my head, I have a fair idea whether it's going to do well or not. Sometimes I'll make a video because I want to make it. I'd say that's about 40% of videos is me trying to do something that I know people will like. 20% of them is me going, they might hate this, they might like it. And then maybe 10% is a video that I truly just want to make and I don't care if anybody watches it. But if people are like, I don't care if people are watching it, well, why are you posting it on TikTok then? Clearly you care if somebody watches it.
Mm.
My goal when I put up a video is to have as many people laugh and enjoy that video as humanly possible. That's what I'm trying to do. And I'm not shy about saying that when a video gets more views, I prefer that to when it gets 9.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate the honesty and I think that's fair enough. But as well, you've sort of said about being consistent and posting pretty much every day.
Mm-hmm.
There must be pressure with that as well. Because, you know, there's no one who's funny every single day. Do you find that a little bit of a pressure as well?
Yeah, it is. But like, people are obsessed with doing things in the healthiest way now. And I get that to an extent, but there's got to be a bit of pressure and a bit of stress for you to do anything useful. The reality is you have to keep trying stuff. And the more you're putting pressure on yourself to generate ideas, the more better ideas you have. People can be too concerned with really waiting and like trying to filter out the best. And I just don't think most of the time you're a very good judge of what of yours is good.
Yeah.
Somebody else needs to judge that for you, I think, most of the time.
Yeah, I actually think that's really interesting. There's a lot of creators who, well, do you know who it is? Prince always said this. I love Prince. And he would be so prolific and would just churn out tracks all the time. Some of them, the hits that we know and love. Some of them, completely random, obscure B-sides that really only the super fans listen to. And, you know, they're definitely maybe a little bit more questionable.
Yeah.
But he always said it was part of his creative process to always be creating.
Yes.
And it doesn't really matter if it's all a hit or not. So you're in the same mindset as Prince. That's pretty good.
I think everybody's in that. What people forget when they listen to an artist they like and they'll listen to an album and there's 12 good songs on it. There's a whole process there where he's written 50 songs. A producer has gone, we can try work with these 20. And then, but that's somebody else coming in. And I kind of think of TikTok as that. TikTok is somebody else coming in and go, oh, that's a good idea. Maybe you should try more of that. Then all the songs get produced and a load of other people listen to it and they go, well, we're not so sure on those 5. So you're only hearing 15% of what was done. But it's being presented to you as if that's all they ever do is great stuff. And other people are involved in the process. You don't walk into a studio with a guitar and come out with a hit song. You go in, somebody else goes, oh, you should take that part off. Why are you saying that? This is always happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing about social media is now you can go and flick through somebody's TikTok page who's successful, but a lot of people don't. So you can go and look at, you know, somebody failing all the time and go, oh, well, that's part of it too. And failing is like probably the more important part.
Yeah, I think that's very, very true. And oftentimes we don't see enough of failure. So I think that's actually a great way of thinking about it. I wanted to ask though, so we've spoken about your rise to fame. We've spoken about the brand partnerships, your growing audience, but this has actually made you somewhat of a well-recognizable figure. You know, people know who you are. And I wonder as well for someone who, as I said, fell into this a little bit unintentionally, it's gone amazingly well, which is absolute credit to you. How are you coping with that? Like, how does that feel to maybe have on and offline fame?
Yeah, it's strange. So I had no concept that there was a pathway from putting up stupid TikToks to like being involved in the Late Late Show or people coming up to you on the streets and knowing who you are. I didn't ever conceive. Like, I thought, even if I'd imagined I would have had as many followers as I have now on TikTok and Instagram and all that, I think I would have assumed they would all be like these spread out kind of weird people with my sense of humor and I'd never really run into them. But that hasn't been the case at all. You know, a lot of the time when I'm out and about, it's quite regular if I go to a busy place that I'm going to have maybe 50, 60 people come up to me in quite a small space of time and try and take a picture. I had no concept of that.
Mm.
I'm still getting used to it. So yeah, it's definitely an adjustment. It's a strange thing.
Yeah. And I think as well, you mentioned, we don't have to go into it in like too much detail, but you mentioned that you had agoraphobia in the past. So again, that's also like quite a transition.
Yeah.
From someone who maybe struggled with that and the sort of the anxiety around that. That's quite a journey that you've been on.
Yeah. Well, I have a tendency to do things despite myself for some reason. So my entire job is, you know, going out and performing in front of people on stage and then going out into the world and interacting with them. And I have agoraphobia and I'm actually a complete introvert. So it's a bit of a weird juxtaposition. But yeah, I mean, it's fine sometimes. It's like anything. I think people can sugarcoat it a bit and go, oh, you know, it's great all the time. Or, oh, it's terrible. It's like, well, sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's average. Sometimes you're just in a bad mood. You don't want, everybody knows what it's like to walk out on the street and just not want anyone to see you that day.
Yeah.
Maybe you didn't shower that day. You're feeling sick. And then somebody wants to take a picture of you and you're like, oh my God. But that's really it. I mean, I'm so lucky in that almost everybody who comes up to me is just so positive and lovely and reaffirming and telling me to continue with it and that it makes them happy. And I just think that's brilliant.
No, definitely.
I'm unbelievably lucky. I mean, I could not have fathomed 6 months ago that my life would be where it is now. It has exceeded my expectation on every metric, which is just incredible.
Yeah.
Strange thing to experience. Never thought I would experience it, but it's insane. So I'm very passionate now that people pursue things because I could not have imagined the extent to which it transformed my life.
I don't mean to embarrass you, but let's touch on some of that. So, I mean, you're a cover girl now. You've been on various different covers. You've been on TV plenty of times. You've been on the radio. You flew out to perform for the F1 Bahrain. You've been playing arenas with the Two Johnnies in Dublin. And your music career, you're doing a lot more gigs. Like, I have to say again, as someone who follows you, you are never in the same place for like more than 12 hours, it feels like. You are non-stop touring, doing all sorts at the moment.
And even when you list all that stuff out, that doesn't feel like my life. Like you're saying all these things and I'm like, oh yeah, that has all happened. And it's insane to me. Even the fact that, I mean, I was playing in pubs less than 6 months ago to, you know, three people in a pub and they want you to shut up so they can watch the darts or whatever it might be. That was my life for 10 years and it's a fine way to make a living. But to go from that to people buying tickets to see me and wanting to take pictures with me and all that sort of stuff, I still can't fathom it.
Mm.
I did a venue not so long ago and it was a 400-seater venue. It's not an arena, but it was just me. And when we were putting it out, I was like, wow, we're not going to sell 10 of these, do you know? And we sold them all and it didn't take that long. And I was like, wow, that's insane. People want to pay money to come and see me. It's just incredible to me.
Yeah. Would you consider yourself a musician first? You've been able to strategize your music into this. You said that a lot of your public appearances are like a blend now of the chat and the music, which I think is great.
It's not really a strategy as such. It's that I physically couldn't do an hour of comedy. Like, so I've done music all my life. People are like, oh, you should put on a show. It's like, well, I can do about 20 minutes of comedy. Rest is going to have to be music. The comedy bit's expanding a little bit now. But that's just necessity. I haven't got a choice. I'm not a seasoned comedian. I don't have 2 hours of material to pull from. So the music has to be there. But people enjoy it, which is great as well. People have been very receptive to that stuff. And oftentimes it does just as well as my other posts do, which is incredible to me as well.
Yeah. And I mean, fair play to you. I think if people just saw your online content and just saw the jokes, I've seen this. People are quite shocked at how good you are at music. Like, you're a tremendous musician.
Ah, thank you so much. Thanks, Amelia. I think I just don't push it in people's faces maybe, so they just don't know I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just surprising to them that I'm doing that as well.
So what's next for you? Are you going to be focusing more on the music, just trying to keep riding this donkey all the way to the finish line? Like, what is next?
The reality is I'm trying to catch up to what's happened. Like, I wasn't expecting what I had so far. So I'm still trying to catch up to what's happening now. So I'm happy out, to be honest with you. Just going to continue doing what I've been doing and enjoying it.
I love that. So just before we finish up, we're going to be asking all of our guests this question this season, which is, do you have a consistent strategy or rule that you've noticed is consistently effective to successful posts on social media? Is it maybe something that you swear by that you can leave with our listeners?
Absolutely. The first 5 seconds are key. And beyond even that, the first second is key. So if you can give somebody the most information in the first second about what your video is and why they might want to watch it, that's what's going to make it work. So if you're making a video about something, what's the most like declarative or out there or funny or whatever statement you can make at the start, have a caption on screen that doesn't say the same thing. So it doesn't, if you're saying something, don't say it again. Say something else useful on the caption and give people some context as to what the whole video is. If you can have something in the background that gives people even more context to what you're doing, the most amount of information you can give people in a second is what you should do. That's what I try to do, and it seems to work.
Yeah, I've just realized I totally see that in your posts.
Yeah.
Nice.
If there's anything I actively think about, it's that. Because that's like, you know, your YouTube thumbnail is like, people have these crazy thumbnails to get you to click. Mm-hmm. On TikTok and Instagram, your thumbnail is the start of the video.
Yeah. And you've got to be scroll stopping. So you need to have something to stop them from scrolling.
Yeah. You need to get them like that, like in a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you've got maybe five for them to decide whether they're going to watch the video.
Yeah. Jeepers.
But a lot of people would be like, hello, how are you doing? Today I'm going to, they're gone. So I used to say, hello, how are you getting on at the start of videos? And people liked that I said that because it was something that was in every video. But I realized like most people are gone.
Yeah.
So now I go, trees are blowing down in Mayo.
Yeah, you do like an angry shite at the start. Like I've definitely seen that. It's interesting you mentioned there, like you're just very, very quickly the catchphrases. So, hello, how are you? That's gone. But follow me, I'm delicious.
Well, that's at the end. So it doesn't affect the video. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's here to stay. That's going nowhere.
Well, people get really pissed off if I don't say that. So I kind of have to say it now. It's good as well because I'm asking people to follow me in every video and they're not annoyed about it. But people get mad if I don't ask them to follow me.
Yeah, that's true. Garen, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. This was so nice. I'm sure our listeners will get loads of great tips from you. And if they want to follow you, because you're delicious, where can they do that?
I'm Garen_music on TikTok and Instagram. I have a YouTube channel as well. I don't know the name of it though, so, but them two anyway. Follow me. I'm delicious and stay delicious because you all are delicious.
Thank you so much, Garen.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Social Creatures with me, Kat Anderson. Many thanks to Garen Noon for joining me today, and a thank you to Sprout Social for making this podcast possible. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to let us know on social media at Sprout Social and subscribe to hear other episodes like this wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.